A select group of state lawmakers returned to Raleigh Thursday morning to hold another public meeting on redistricting. They are working to correct 28 state Senate and House districts the U.S. Supreme Court found to be illegal racial gerrymanders. Gerrymandering was the subject of a recent episode of our podcast, Candidate Me. Host Tom Bullock talked with State Senator Jeff Jackson about the practice and how the Democrat from Mecklenburg County hopes to take advantage of the new maps in order to break the Republican supermajorities in the state legislature. Here's an excerpt of that conversation.
Gerrymandering, it can fairly be said, has made Senator Jeff Jackson basically invincible come election day. And that, he says in a video on gerrymandering, is the problem.
Here's how bad it's gotten in North Carolina. Out of 170 state legislators, 90% of us are essentially invulnerable in a general election. 90% of us have no real chance of losing to a member of the other party. We could endorse our opponents. We could participate in television debates with sock puppets and still win.
His examples are extreme, but his point is right. But wait, Jackson says, it gets worse. Because safe seats mean the real election comes not in November, but in the primaries, which means the small percentage of voters who actually vote in primaries have the most electoral sway. But right now, with court-ordered redistricting underway, Jackson sees a real opportunity, maybe not to fully flip the North Carolina House or Senate from red to blue, but an opportunity to flip just enough seats in one of the chambers to break that all-important supermajority.
Now, you talk about this as completely changing politics. Really, what that would do, though, is just allow vetoes to suddenly stand, which can be a powerful act, but it doesn't necessarily mean governing. It just means being able to stop bills that Democrats, your party, don't like. Is that enough to basically do what you're describing as flipping Republican control of the General Assembly?
Well, unlocking the veto does two big things, and one of them you correctly identified. So the first thing you do is you get to say no to everything that you just staunchly disagree with, which means, for instance, no more HB2s. But the other thing that it does, in a more affirmative sense, is it gives you negotiating leverage on things like tax policy, because they're going to try and pass more tax bills that redistribute wealth from the bottom to the top. It gives you enormous negotiating leverage on the budget. If you need the governor's signature on the budget, guess what happens to teacher pay? It goes up. Guess what happens to early childhood education, pre-K slots? They go up. That's an affirmative use of a veto.
And the number of flip seats needed to, as Jackson says, unleash the power of the veto, it's pretty small. But that doesn't mean it will be easy.
It's three seats to win in the House to break the supermajority and six in the Senate. So on the face of it, it looks like the House is closer. But the House, because they've done better in picking up seats in the last few cycles, they've got to play defense on more seats than we do in the Senate.
But to fully take advantage of this possible opportunity, Democrats need candidates and volunteers to help them. So Jackson went online and created what he calls Game Plan North Carolina.
So you set up a website and you start getting what?
Inundated. It was about 6-8 weeks after the last election. And I put out this website. I say, here's the situation. We're a heavily gerrymandered state, but we're relatively close to being able to break a supermajority. Here's what that would mean for unlocking the veto. I want you to sign up here if you want to be a candidate. And I want you to sign up right below that if you want to be a future volunteer. I started getting hundreds of people signing up saying that they were interested in being candidates, which for a state legislative race is amazing. That's a whole lot of interest. Half of the Republicans were unopposed in the last election.
So let's look at the candidates that you have. You said you've had more than 100 wannabe candidates submit their names.
Several hundred
wannabe candidates. This is a dark political fact. There are candidates that you want to run with, and there are candidates that you don't want on your ticket, and you're nodding your head in agreement. So what do you do once you get these names? Are you or someone else starting to vet them?
That's right, we do. And there's a process for that, and it involves a team that we have in place. But at the end of the day, we can't tell anybody you can't run for office.
So tell me about the team. How do you vet them?
Well, you send them a questionnaire, and you say, what's your level of interest? Tell us a little bit about your background. Tell us why you want to run. And if people can do a really good job at talking about either public education or healthcare or energy, then it's pretty clear they're going to be a good candidate.
What are the red flags?
The red flags are the people who are really angry and not much else. They say, I just can't stand what's happening. I don't like these people, and that's why I'm running. Well, that's a concern. There needs to be something good there. There needs to be something optimistic that you think we can accomplish by working together, because the anger just won't feed you in the campaign. It won't get you through the hard slog that a campaign is, and voters aren't going to connect with it.
Jackson can't say just where these possible candidates may run. Nobody will know that until the new state house districts are drawn, and only then will we find out how his game plan performs.
WFAE's Tom Bullock. You can hear more of this conversation and check out other episodes of our Candidate Me podcast on WFAE.org or on iTunes.